This episode is brought to you by Voodoo Ranger. It's beer. It's hoppy, trend-setting, innovative, served with a little sarcasm, just like Paper House Network.
Paper House Network is hoppy?
Yeah. It's like beer for your ears. Get yourself a Voodoo Ranger!
Welcome to the Pinch Music Podcast, episode number 67. Today we're doing electronic, or as my son calls it, electronical. And it's been quite hiatus. I would have to apologize for any fans that we do have, if whether it be real or the robot. Robots have feelings too, Jim, mm-hmm. as you know.
Well, they're in for a treat for this
Big
episode.
Treat.
Big, why?
Because this is all robot music.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Man, I'm off. So, it's been a while, because summer happened, we got busy. And I just feel, Jim, what's going on, buddy?
I feel like I still hear the music.
Yeah, I feel like I hear the music too, but that's okay.
Yeah. It's all right.
It's always there, mm-hmm. whether you want it or not, yeah. the music. Mm-hmm. But why did we, Nick, can you explain why we did electronic music this week, please?
We did electronic music because, for those fans of Pinch Records, we just released a brand new album called Nothing Something that just came out last week. And it's about six tracks of just electronic synth music. I like to call it the Synth Daddies. For those who have been following us, it is actually Scott and Jim's opus, if you will. They put the album out. It's actually fantastic. I think it's really, really cool. It's got a lot of, obviously, the synth sound that Jim is like a master of. He's a synth lord. You know,
Jim is a synth lord. During the day, he does marketing and stuff, and also randomly gets called down to do the modular synthesizer in various sessions. Mm-hmm. When people come into the room here at Pinch Recording, we have a beautiful modular synth, which nobody knows how to use. I mean, mm-hmm. I can make it go like that.
That's pretty good.
I can get a sound out of it. But nobody really knows how to use
it. Like, you know those old black and white photos of people, of like old dispatchers, like plugging wires into holes on the wall so you can make a phone call?
Phone operators, yeah.
Yeah, phone operators. That's what this thing looks like.
Very
just in
much.
A, in a smaller, yeah. smaller form. And Jim's the phone operator.
Yeah, so Jim's basically a phone operator.
Yeah.
And so what we wanted to do an electronic episode because we came out with this new record. The record is out on Pinch Records, which is our own label that we've started. We have a lot of good and fun stuff coming out on there. We're going to be doing comedy albums as well as music albums. And you can go on Spotify and search Nothing Something. The links obviously are in the notes for the larger playlist. And all of the songs that we chose on the larger playlist that didn't make the episodes are there as well. But what we did, Gemini, is we came in. Gemini? Jim, Gemini. You don't happen to be a Gemini, do you?
No, I'm Aquarius.
Aquarius is the worst sign.
Jesus.
So we decided
to have our own song.
We decided to come in. Yeah, Fifth Dimension.
Yeah.
We decided to come in, which was on the Soul episode, which you can catch from last week.
The last episode we did.
Right, which we'll call last week. Because yeah. in like a year from now, there's not going to be no one's going to know it's been 3 weeks since the last episode.
Yeah.
But now they will. Anyway, we decided to come in and do a synth-inspired record. For me, it was actually highly inspired by one of my choices, Klaus Schulze, who is a German krautrock electronic music pioneer. And a lot of his records, and he has like 60 albums, but his early, early records are all like 20-minute pieces, which were done live off of synthesizers. And I love the idea of the vinyl, you know, dictating the length of the piece. So each song is 20 minutes long because that was the ideal length of a vinyl side. Right. Mm-hmm. So when you buy the records, there's two sides and there's two songs, and each song is like 20 minutes long. And it's basically a sonic soundscape, which I found a lot in the electronic music as I was mm-hmm. listening to my choices. I'm definitely drawn to more ambient sonic soundscapes, sort of avant-garde electronic music. Mm-hmm. And what I've found is the early electronic music, a lot of it was more ambient soundscapes rather than actual beats and, you know, and
well, I think because they're figuring out how to use the stuff.
Right.
They probably we'll get into it, but I don't even think they could put together like a real electronic composition early on. It was just like, well, it makes this sound.
Yeah. And so they, it was like just creating these really beautiful soundscapes, you know, and some of them which become like really dark. Some of them are happy, you know, but it's funny because a lot of those ambient things can tend towards being very ominous.
Oh, yeah. Big
time. And I didn't know The Shining, you know, the movie The Shining, the soundtrack is very synth daddy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys noticed that. Check out the soundtrack on that. It's super synth daddy.
Yeah. It's Wendy Carlos who is on here.
Correct. Oh, did you put her on?
Well, so actually she's not on here. But
she's not, but she's on the larger playlist.
She's on here in a way.
Well, we have all kinds of different things to talk about. It's hard to put everything into a small playlist when we're talking about electronic music as a whole. But should we get into the music?
Yeah, let's jump right
Nick,
in.
Nick, you got anything to say?
I'm sure we're going to get into there's a lot of things. The fun thing about electronic music is at one point after I'm going through this, I had to stop and be like, wait, am I doing this right? Because basically what it boils down to is every song in the last 40 years. Like, the amount of the electronic sound, quote-unquote, can go in all different directions. The list of genres that are under electronic music is quite extensive. I'm sure we're going to get into
sub-genres,
that.
If you will.
Yeah, and then, like, just the instrumentation. Basically, if you have a Hammond organ, you can kind of call that electronic, if, like, kind of
Hammond organ, 100% synthesizer.
Yeah, so it's just kind of like, well, what is electronic music? And it basically, it's anything that's not acoustic over the last 40 years. And I just start
even acoustic music, you know, can be construed as electronic, like samples.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so when I put this list together, especially the songs I have, I really went sample heavy because that's what I do. So I have a couple, the three songs I have all have samples to them. And I was going deep. And I was covering from, you know, EDM DJs and techno DJs from the 90s. Then going across, I got a song from Finland on here. And then, like I just said, you know, anything that has a synthesizer is technically electronic music. Then you got Zapp and Roger with the vocal decoder. And it's just like, all right,
let's not even mention the theremin.
Yeah, well, like, where do we even, where do we draw the line? Yeah. And it got to a point where, like, all right, well, let's just do this because I can't stop.
I know. Yeah, I mean, I was saying this to you earlier. It's like, we may have well said, well, we're doing rock music today because it's so broad. And in my head at first, I'm like, oh, well, we can talk about like early stuff with, you know, theremins and sci-fi shit and then move up to like krautrock stuff and then, you know, dance music. And it's like, you're being like, we could spend 3 weeks on this.
Yeah.
So but I think we're not really doing an overview of like what it's all about. We're just kind of picked out some random cool stuff.
I think electronic is definitely more niche than just saying rock. You know,
a little bit, yeah.
It's definitely a broad genre.
Yeah.
But that's the fun thing about electronic music. If I were to say to you, like, 10 people on the street, first thing that comes to your mind when I say, what do you think of electronic music? You probably be like, techno, EDM. Yeah. You know, something like that.
Nobody's mentioning Tangerine Dream.
You have this certain thought in your head when you immediately hear electronic music. Then you take a breath, stand back, and look. You'd be like, oh, you mean everything? Because everything. You know what? Here's another thing that we do on this podcast is we try not to add bands that we've talked about before, which was kind of hard because
it's impossible.
Though. I was just watching something on Axis TV about Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails, and the fact like that he's one of the best to use electronic music to make rock music and like blur those lines. And it was just like, well, we've talked about Nine Inch Nails, so how do I not talk about him? But here we are. I wanted to mention
Trent, I think, Reznor. At some point we have to potentially let go of that.
Yeah.
Because at some point we're going to just have to talk about other people.
But I think electronic is so broad that there's enough.
Should we jump in?
Let's just go right into it. Mm-hmm.
that is the artist Square Pusher off the album Be Up a Hello. And the song is Oberlove. I don't know.
Oberlove.
I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Oberlove?
Sure.
But I think Jim was mentioning before that we've talked about Square Pusher before. And actually, originally, my first pick was LCD Sound System. Mm. But then I was like, we talked about them before, too.
Yeah.
And I felt like, after I looked at the episode list, I felt like we should represent Square Pusher in the electronic playlist. Because
sure. He
his name is Tom Jenkinson. He was born in January of 1975. Clearly, I'm looking at Wikipedia. Wikipedia. He's an English electronic musician. Mm-hmm. But he's very well known for dicing up and creating very, I don't know what you would how you'd call it, like fast cut up music.
Yeah.
And he was very highly inspired by jazz and Charlie Parker and that kind of vibe. Like if you listen to Charlie Parker playing the saxophone, it's very cut up, insanely like complex.
Yeah. Very unexpected rhythms that just sort of seem to come out of nowhere, but then somehow work.
Yeah. So, and his dad was a jazz drummer, and he was very influenced by jazz. So he's known as an electronic musician, but also a contemporary avant-garde jazz.
Yeah, he's a great bass. He's like,
yeah,
top level bass player, one of the best bass players in the world.
Yeah. Have you ever seen him live?
Yeah, a couple times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was great.
Were you on LSD?
No, I was just on a nice pale ale or two.
A pale ale?
Yeah.
So you were drunk?
No, just like one or two. You know, it was.
Do you have a problem? Do we need to talk about this on air? In fact, Jim, Jim definitely does not have a problem.
We do have a problem. We don't have enough Voodoo Ranger in the studio.
Speaking of Voodoo Ranger.
We should be drinking Voodoo Ranger while we're doing these. That's our sponsor. Shout out to Voodoo Ranger.
Shout out to Voodoo Ranger, everybody. But anyway, Square Pusher is interesting because it's really, really intense music, but in some ways it's almost easy to listen to. Like the production of it is so smooth and accessible. Yeah.
This track in particular, I think, exemplifies that. It's like, it's so weird musically, but the progression is pretty standard. The chords going on. And it's like so smooth. You're like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah, like you could almost hear it in an elevator. And you're like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah.
But then you're like, wait, no, it's not. It's completely insane and avant-garde.
Yeah.
Do you listen to Square Pusher at all, Nick?
Nah, not a lot. I mean, I know of them because of this podcast, and Jim has talked about it before, and I like it. I don't dislike it. It's just one of those, put it in the queue, and it's like, when I get to it. So I've been on a punk kick lately, but we'll get into that later.
Huh. Yeah. Have you?
Yeah.
I'm not huge into punk. I mean, we've talked about that before.
It's a new age punk. It's like a whole new, you know what? Well, for another time.
Okay. Well, I think we can.
Let's stay with the electronic.
All right, this was an interesting choice by Nick. Let's listen to it.
Well, that is not Daft Punk. That is Edwin Birdsong's Cola Bottle Baby. And I say it like that because obviously you know me. I'm going to get into the samples. And Daft Punk obviously sampled that song for Bigger, Faster, Stronger, Harder, whatever, how that was. I know I just butchered that, but whatever. Edwin Birdsong, though, is actually, he's a really, really talented musician. He came up in the 70s. He went to Juilliard. He was like a DJ over. He went to Vietnam, and then when he was stationed in Germany, he would be a DJ, and he would entertain people. Then he moved to New York, went to Juilliard, learned music composition, and he started making his own music. And this was one of the songs that is kind of his more popular one that has been sampled by Daft Punk, which then went and got sampled by Kanye West. And then he stopped making his own music and kind of just was a session player, like on the synth and the Hammond organ, and he would play with like people like Stevie Wonder. So I thought it was just interesting the fact that it's such a, like the synthesizer and Hammond organ, and it's just, it's an instrument that is Juilliard-trained classical composer-type music, and it's not just electronic, I'm sticking this wire into this hole, and we're going to make some weird synth noise and ambient noise, blah, 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 DJ. It's, you know,
now we know what he thinks of our album, by the way.
Thanks, Nick.
Yeah.
Oh, and I will say a couple things while it's on my mind. The album that we came out with, Nothing Something, and obviously we're shamelessly promoting this, the vinyls are going to be available very soon. Part of the reason we wanted to do this is we wanted to release a double LP. So the vinyl of Nothing Something is coming soon for all the DJs that want to sample our music. Mm-hmm. And by all the DJs, I mean none of the DJs.
Is Moby still around?
I think so.
Yeah, I hope
but
get a hold of it.
This was an interesting choice because I think you the reason you chose this is you wanted to showcase like the Hammond organ and like a synthesizer, but it's funk music.
Oh yeah.
So like when you put it under a genre of electronic, I think it's a little bit of a stretch. Like if just I know where you're going with it, but if you to step back and you're a listener and you put on an electronic playlist and then funk comes on, you're like, this isn't electronic. But and maybe it uses, but I understand where you're going with
well,
it.
That's the point.
I think the main reason is really it's from probably the most famous Daft Punk song.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the connection?
Yeah. And that's the point I'm trying to make is that it's, you don't, when you think electronic music, you just said it, you wouldn't think this song, you wouldn't think funk music, but then, well, why not? Funk uses...
Because it's funk, not electronic. And so the other thing I was going to say...
Well, but why? What does the instrumentation doesn't...
Like, I think the instrumentation, the feel, the groove, sure, it's different than electronic music. I think the main reason is, I think what makes it electronic music versus funk is the core of the music is made by synthesizers rather than the synthesizers being a featured instrument in the music. Yeah. So the featured instrument in funk is going to be drums and bass, whereas and then you put a synthesizer over it. So it's rather than have it all be synthesizers and then some drums come in.
But then once you sample that song, it becomes one of the most
maybe,
electronic song.
Right. Like, so why not put the Daft Punk song on?
Because that's my point. Like,
okay.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
What is the point again?
That electronic music isn't just what you're saying it is. It's everything. But it's almost like jazz.
It's not jazz.
It's not.
And well, it is a little bit.
So there it is.
But I guess I'm disagreeing with you on this one because that's funk music. It's not electronic.
Well, but if you take
it has electronic elements.
You take a funk song that has electronic elements, like this song, and then you have that whole project. And then you just sample that whole entire project, and it now becomes an electronic song. Mm-hmm. What's the difference?
Well, this is something I want to say about Daft Punk, and I don't mean this as a criticism, although I do mean it as a criticism. I love Daft Punk. I listen to a lot of Daft Punk. But whenever I hear the samples that they use, you'll hear this in a lot of their famous songs. You go back and listen to the sample, I'm like, what did they even do to this?
Exactly.
It's like they compressed it. It's like I'm like there's not even like a different beat over it. It's like they just took this.
That's it.
That's their song.
Daft yeah. Punk is hip hop sampling at its finest. It's just you take something you like and you loop it.
I'm not a huge Daft Punk guy. I mean, mm-hmm. not that I just don't listen to him.
But my point is like how weird is it that Daft Punk? You put Daft Punk on a quote unquote electronic playlist. Everyone's like, yeah, of course. But literally all they're doing is just taking the song that is a funk song that has electronic elements to it, and yet that's not technically electronic. It's like, well,
but the song, and I'm not sure if I even know the song you guys are referring to, but like the song is cut up, isn't it? There's other instruments laid over it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's not just this song repeated in a loop.
No, not exactly. But I'm just saying how little they warp this sample is almost like disappointing. They're just like playing it. And then adding that vocoded,
I mean,
harder,
by your
faster, stronger thing.
By your argument, Nick, it's like saying, you know, the Can song that was sampled by one of your favorite hip hop people. What was that?
I think it was Bus Driver.
Anyway, that's like saying That's like saying the Can song is a hip hop because it was sampled by a hip hop person.
This is definitely closer to that piece that is sampled is very electro,
but that's the weird because hip-hop is not instrumentation. Hip-hop is a culture, whereas electronic, where do we pull the plug literally and figuratively on what is electronic? I mean, when do we want to go down this crazy list
I think that most people, like, if you were to submit this to Spotify and say, hey, can you put this on your electronic playlist, they would write back and be like, this is clearly not electronic music. Thank you very much.
And I would know. I'm a robot.
And I...
yeah.
We finally got Jim to admit it.
Right.
I'm saying Spotify would say that, but sure.
Yeah. And I'm almost... I'm arguing with you now, Scott, just to be... to present the
too.
Other side. I'm
me
not.
Too.
But yeah. I don't think you're wrong, and that's kind of the point I'm saying, is I almost tend to agree with you, but, like, I'm just trying to blur the lines here. I'm just literally blurred lines. That's another electronic... Anyway, I can't stop. And I'm just trying to present the fact that, like, electronic music is everywhere, and just because it's a funk song and then it gets sampled in this and blah blah blah, and like I agree with you, this is a funk song. If to put it on an electronic playlist would be nutty,
right? So and why did you do that?
Because you wanted
to have this argument,
because I wanted to bring this up. I wanted to bring up the point that there's electronic elements are everywhere, and
sure,
I think that's important to talk about. And we're going to get into more of it.
I love it, and I love the argument. I think we can all agree that you're wrong, right?
Not if my original point was to bring up that subject. So take that.
So that is Autobahn by Kraftwerk off of Autobahn. And I do not think we could reasonably have an electronic music episode without having Autobahn, without having Kraftwerk on here. Could have it without Autobahn.
Yeah.
Because
I'm turning a corner on Kraftwerk. And I will say this, and I know this is your pick, and I'm canalizing everything.
Yeah, that's fine.
But this early Kraftwerk is so fucking good. It makes me angry, because you could put, and this is 22 minute song, FYI, put it on a vinyl and it will make your day better. It's just like, it's like being a butterfly going down the highway. I mean, I know it's a car going down the highway, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it is like that
might not be a butterfly though.
That sequencer that's going in the background. Yeah. It's so fucking good. And you can't repeat it. You can't. We've tried.
Yeah.
We've tried to copy it. You can't copy it, because it was a moment in time. All right, go ahead, Jim.
But Kraftwerk is really the beginning of electronic music entering the mainstream. Obviously, they did not invent electronic music. We can name a ton of examples that come before them. But this is really where everything that we think about electronic music today is. It's like the starting point. And they, you know, as Scott's saying, talking about early Kraftwerk, their early stuff is more like experimental. They bring in, it's like semi-improvised long stuff with traditional instruments mixed with electronic stuff. And with Autobahn, they really move into, like, this was their first commercial success. Like, we're just doing, like, it's sort of free-flowing, but very structured, purely electronic music. And I mean, it really just spread from there. They started in Germany. They toured the U.S. in 75 and became this like cool underground German thing happening. And, you know, they're just incredibly influential. It would be hard to be an electronic artist who is not influenced by Kraftwerk or influenced by someone who's in, you know, even if you don't know it, you're influenced by Kraftwerk.
Scott, do you think that you're, what's the word, animosity or dislike, I'd say, towards Kraftwerk?
I don't dislike Kraftwerk.
I
called it, right?
But you've said that you're not a huge Kraftwerk fan. But do you think that comes from the fact that you are a huge Krautrock fan and a huge Can fan? And then when people who don't really understand Krautrock, they say, oh, Kraftwerk. And you just like roll your eyes because they're like, ugh, that's the easy answer.
I will say that has to be it, but Scott can obviously answer for himself.
I mean, I think what it is that Kraftwerk, I don't think, fully represents what Krautrock really is, as far as like the cultural movement of Krautrock, you know? And because Krautrock is more, I mean, I don't know. I think it's proven by the fact that they, as a band, are not necessarily proud of their earlier work, which is a little bit more kraut than their later work. So their later work goes more into computer music and more robot and very like avant-garde modern museum versus your sort of ethereal kraut rock, right? So like the fact that they don't even like their earlier music, which is more kraut rock, makes them less of a kraut rock band per se, right? But they're the most famous kraut rock band, but I wouldn't even call them kraut rock. Maybe their first two albums. After that, not really.
So it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, you get annoyed when,
because it's, they're not your quintessential kraut rock band.
And
they're
just
someone
who loves kraut rock. They're more,
they are, however, sort of your avant-garde modern museum, like, for example,
modern museum.
No, because my brother,
it's like art,
the reason
rock,
I'm saying, yeah, because the, yeah, the reason I'm saying that is because my brother lives in London and they had this big exhibit at the Tate Modern in London, which is like one of the most famous modern museum or modern art museums, about kraftwerk. And he texted me some pictures of like the exhibit, whatever they're, the ads like on the metro and stuff for the kraftwerk thing, you know. And that's what I mean. It's more like, you know, there's a toilet and kraftwerk is playing in the background, and it's like, wow, look at the architecture on that toilet. You know what I mean?
Meanwhile, it's all shit.
But I mean, kraftwerk. But I will say, like, I'm starting to understand a little bit more the computerized kraftwerk stuff and starting to get into that mindset a little bit more.
You're starting to like kraftwerk for what it is.
Correct.
And removing the idea of like, ugh, stop calling them kraftwerk. There's so much more to krautrock than just kraftwerk. Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah.
I get it. I get it.
I think you also have to consider, like, it kind of came from nowhere. Like, they're making up the genre, you know?
Yeah.
There wasn't something like this that came out beforehand.
Well, what year is this?
Like 72, maybe 74.
So, I mean, there was stuff happening before this.
There was stuff happening before this. Sure, there was stuff happening before this. I'm saying this particular sound is Kraftwerk sound.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, there's the harmonia. I'd have to look at when that was released. But it's all kind of intertwined. Yeah.
But it was also...
Harmonia Deluxe, Harmonia...
It's harder to get that. It's harder to be influenced by other things because it's 1972.
When was Harmonia Deluxe released?
I don't know.
Why don't you look at that while I play the next tune, which is also Krautwerk,
Krautrock.
Krautwerk.
Krautwerk.
Now I just want a hot dog.
Like, that sounds, is like that a weird? That sounds like a dance.
75. So after.
After. Oh, yeah. Now we have to make some arguments. So that is Klaus Schulze off the album Time Wind. The song is called Bayreuth Return. I think we've talked about Klaus Schulze before.
Yeah,
for sure.
But I would be remiss if I were not to not talk about Klaus Schulze on the electronic playlist. And the reason I wanted to put this on in particular is because this album was actually the impetus of Nothing Something, which is obviously Gemini's new album. And... it was
a lot of synergy in here today.
Yeah, it was
synthergy.
Synthergy. There's a lot of synthergy.
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 That's really funny, guys. Great pun.
Well, I mean, look, Klaus Schulze is a huge influence in electronic music as a whole, and he has something like 60 to 80 albums or something like that, and I'm pretty sure he's still alive and still making records. So if you go to his Spotify profile artist page, you'll see all of his records. Personally, I've gotten through some of the earlier records. On vinyl, they're actually harder to find too, because so much of the krautrock is so hard to find on vinyl. But again, this was a huge influence because I love the idea of sitting down, putting on a record, and listening to an entire track. And that's something that I think is a lost art, as we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm. What does Babe Ruth return mean?
What do you mean?
What is that?
Babe Ruth return?
Who's Babe Ruth?
What is that? Oh, Babe. That's thought you were saying Babe Ruth.
Someone named Ruth?
I thought you were talking about the baseball player.
George Herman Ruth.
I'm not sure. I don't know what the titles are. You know, titles, who
it's
knows?
It's krautrock, man.
It's krautrock. You know what I mean? Yeah. Don't ask questions. Just go with it.
Now, he was the drummer for Tangerine Dream, correct?
Yes, he
another
was.
Another huge electronic pioneer.
Yes. He was the drummer for Tangerine Dream for a short time. Mm-hmm. Tangerine Dream is another one of those bands that has a ton of records. They've done a ton of soundtracks. Mm-hmm. Tangerine Dream's a weird one because they did the soundtrack to Legend, the movie.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
No.
The Tom Cruise movie. I think it's called Legend.
Okay.
Where he's like young and he's like floating around and stuff.
Okay.
I don't know if that's what
that's what says on the back of the
it's
DVD.
It's about some legend.
The back of the DVD. He's Tom Cruise, young, he's floating around.
But Tangerine Dream is on the darker side of the electronic spectrum. So like a lot of their records are really dark. Some people call them dreamy, but I call them nightmares.
Interesting.
Like nightmare dreamy. Hmm. So it's tough. They're not my favorite. Klaus Schulze is a little bit more interesting to me than the Tangerine Dream stuff, and Popol Vuh is another band, but they're less electronic.
I think a lot of this music is tied into you just said dreamy or nightmare-y, dark, but I just think it's a lot of. It just reminds me of soundtracks and scores a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
But it can put you on another plane because it's not natural. You know, I think that's part of it. That's why it might feel dreamy. Like you feel like. It's just naturally otherworldly.
Yeah, I guess so. That's interesting because this is one of these episodes where I would love to pull a bunch of people and ask them, like, immediately, what do you think when I say electronic music? Or what Jim just said, what do you think of otherworldly music? And I would not think electronic. I would think, it's hard to articulate it, but
Well, you could reference our ethereal playlist.
Yes, ethereal, or just something like you just said, Scott, dreamy, where electronic doesn't make me think of other world, but it is kind of because
I think if you said most people, you said electronic, one, they wouldn't say funk, they wouldn't put on like funk music, but also I think they would go with like
yeah, totally.
That's what they.
That was pretty good, Scott.
They're not thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I think the majority of it is techno, if you will. But there's a lot of genre.
Well, we're gonna get into one of your picks, Nick, now, which is gonna bring us back into some sort of sense of normalcy. I take it back. Should I play a little bit?
The band is Nightstop. The song is Streetwalker, and this is a band that I literally just discovered 2 days ago doing this getting ready for this episode, and that's why I put it on, because that's the whole point of this, of why we do this. It's to discover new music and be like, oh man, what is this? Oh, I like this. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about it. There's not a lot out there about them. They're from Finland. They're a relatively newer band. This song came out.
Oh, it's very 80s throwback.
It came out in 2017.
It's
but
like industrial Stranger Things.
But exactly. That's
definitely the Prophet.
It's exactly what that is. They are going like synth wave, new wave, a pop throwback, which is weird. It's new age throwback. And it's very 80s vibe, which is now becoming all the rage again. I think The Weeknd has been ripping off the 80s the last couple years. I think they're good. It's good music, but you know my point. And I love this. I listen to this and I think of what I just said about like movie soundtracks. I feel like the Terminator is hunting me.
Now, it's really interesting because people love synthesizers. They do. Like when people come to the studio and they walk in, they see all the synths. They're like, wow. They see the Prophet. The Prophet is a very well-known sort of a legend in synthesizers, right?
Yeah.
And it was made famous again by Stranger Things. Stranger Things is a show that came out on television, which uses, it's a throwback show, which uses Prophet for its main theme. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's become almost like a, it's like almost ingrained in anybody who's over 30 or in their 40s, ingrained in their subconscious of the sound of that era. And people love
it. Totally. Yeah.
It brings them back.
Without a doubt.
It really is something, yeah. The Prophet and the Moog are both like,
yeah.
Those are like the sounds of
when you hear those, you get a feeling. You almost start seeing the colors and smelling the smells that you used to smell in the 80s.
Like, well, I'm smelling the smells
like,
now, buddy.
You know, like you ever remember old Burger King wrappers? Like
yeah.
The Styrofoam Burger King? Like, you don't think of that. Then all of a sudden you hear the Prophet, and you're like, oh, man, I remember that. Yeah. Like, we were just...
But yeah, it's Hot Pink on Black.
Yeah, we were talking about...
That's what it sounds like.
The Salad Shooter the other day in the office, and that was like a product that was on a commercial in the 80s, and we watched that product on YouTube, and I was just like, man... The 80s were awesome. And it was just, and that's like the type of, when I hear songs like this, this came out in 2017, and yet it's making me think about when I was a kid in the 80s. And I love it. That's why I think Stranger Things was so popular, or one of the reasons why it was so popular is just because it had that throwback of that feeling that you had from the 80s that comes from the sound of an electronic instrument. And that's just... I don't know. That's so cool. I think that's so cool. I don't know if there's another way. I mean, maybe because I wasn't alive in the 60s or the 70s, so disco doesn't make me think of the times growing up in the 70s. But I don't know. When I hear that synthesizer, that Prophet, that just, man, I remember being a little kid. And it's just, I don't know. It's cool, and I love it, and I love nostalgia. So what am I going to do?
Well, you know what time it is.
I don't know. What time is it, Scott?
It is time for
a live read with Tidbit Jim.
List of electronic music genres. Ambient. Ambient dub. Dream punk. Reductionism. House music. Acid house. Afro house. Ambient house, bass house, deep house, disco house, electro house, chill out, down tempo, trip hop, trip rock, industrial / post-industrial, deconstructed club, electro industrial, electronic body music, drum and bass, dark step, hard step, drum step, drum funk, intelligent drum and bass.
Thank you, Jim.
He stopped halfway through, by the way. Or
I would say about 10%.
He only read 10% of it. I want to meet the person who can sit here and tell me the difference between all those. He'd be like, oh, yeah, that's intelligent drum step. Oh, no, listening to trip rock. This is more of a...
What is the deal with all those?
It is a thing to be like... I think especially every time electronic music sort of enters the mainstream, people who have probably been listening to it for a long time or super into it want to be like, well, I don't listen to like Skrillex or even like Daft Punk. I listen to whatever, Diva House. And it sort of becomes... Maybe it's like anything. You become obsessed with it, and you start breaking it down into like smaller and smaller little factions. I don't know.
I feel like it's just bands or DJs who want to be their own genre. So like each one of those subgenres represents like one artist. And yeah. It's almost a pretentiousness of it. And I don't, I'm poking fun of it because I'm very ignorant to it. But I also think there's not that many people that know the difference between all those mm-hmm. steps. You know what I mean?
I think if you do produce electronic music for a living, you might know, or at least if you like produce house music for a living.
Yeah, if you
living,
only
you know if what French house is.
Yeah, if you're in the world, I think you know.
Well, I understand. I mean, I'm sure there's certain ones of those. I'm sure if you're in an industrial and I call it techno, it's like insulting, and I get that. But do you think that there's people out there that are like getting upset because I called it Afro dubstep?
Without a doubt.
But it's actually just Afro funk step or something like.
Let's not use the word funk.
You hated that. When as soon as Jim said the word funk, you're like, uh oh, Nick was right. I saw it. I saw it on your face.
No,
because it's not funk music. It's like electro funk, which is not.
It's not funk.
Well, what's electro funk?
Not funk.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows what any of this is.
Electronified funk.
No, nobody knows what any. I think there are people who know.
I want to meet them. Yeah. I want them to message us. Send us a message on Instagram. Send me an email at nick@pinchmusic.com. Tell me that you listen to all of this and that there's a difference between this step, to this dub, to that industry, whatever it is. And I know I sound like I'm poking fun of it, but I literally have no idea, and I would love to know the difference. I would love to be that guy who can walk into a coffee shop and be like, oh, we're listening to Intelligent Drum. It's really cool. I really like this artist. And people are like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? I want to be that guy. I just don't know it.
It's called like just doing some research, Nick.
Yeah. I do want to touch.
You could be that guy.
I want to meet people though. I want to be inspired.
You
want
to meet people.
You just need a friend.
Yeah, I want someone to come up. Although no, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about this, I have met a couple people who are really into this. They're really hard to talk to. Mm-hmm. They talk in binary code. Basically, you're like, all right, fucking. Catch the score of the game last night? Jesus Christ. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I want to touch on the song, though.
Yeah.
We were talking about this earlier, about early electronic music with Wendy Carlos. So this is Switched on Bach. It's not Wendy Carlos. Unfortunately, the real deal Wendy Carlos Switched on Bach album is not on Spotify, so we weren't able to play it. But this is some cover, but I don't care about the cover. This, before Kraftwerk, this was really the first thing that took synthesizer music and showed people you can make regular sounding compositions and songs with synthesizers. So she had a couple Moog synthesizers that she went through and played all these well-known Bach pieces on, and it sounded just like crazy and weird. Now it sounds a little dated, I think, definitely hearing it. But it was a push synthesizers forward, made, I think, especially other musicians listen to and say, oh, we can really play music on synthesizers. It doesn't have to be like weird noises and sliding theremins. We can really incorporate it into our compositions.
Can we talk about the theremin for a second? So the theremin is a really interesting instrument, which is that, you know, it's the instrument that has a radio, metal radio thing on it, and then the player is just playing the air between the two metal objects, and it's just, it sounds like a saw. Mm-hmm. You know, like somebody's playing the saw, it's like, and I've done a couple sessions with theremin, and in fact, we had a theremin session here last week. There's a certain type of person. Now, I'm talking about more about the person who plays the theremin. Mm-hmm. There is a vibe of theremin players where I just can't explain it. It's similar to comics. Like, comics have a personality. They're a certain breed.
Yeah.
Theremin players are a certain breed. Because everyone loves the idea of a theremin. They love the idea of, like, ooh, that's a cool instrument. Wow, you're just playing the air. That's super cool. And then once you realize that it sounds like something dying most of the time, it's like the allure kind of goes away. Work on a theremin session for a couple hours and let me know how you feel about the theremin when it's over.
Well,
the theremin sounds like how Joni Mitchell sings. She's the human theremin.
I don't really but I love Joni Mitchell's voice. So
You've said that before.
And I
know what you're saying. I hear what you're saying.
Listen to next time you listen to a Joni Mitchell song and she's doing out. And look, I think she's a great singer, but sometimes she carries a note, and it's like, what is that, a theremin? Or is that just her voice? And that's, I may have just ruined it for you.
No, probably not. It's a great effect. It's a great effect for sci-fi. I will say that.
But it was invented by Russians.
Yeah, well, that sounds about right.
Why?
I don't know. There was something with the Russians, and they made a theremin, and then they were like, look, we made a theremin. I think that was the historical accuracy of that.
Yeah, that's sounds accurate. I know it was used in classical music originally, so there's that.
Okay, should we move to the next song? Because theremins ruin everything.
Yeah.
Oh, someone better get a pencil.
So that's Clipper by Autechre. Barely getting into the song there, which is quite long, off their album Tri Repete. So Autechre is one of the main, I guess, intelligent dance music artists. It's an electronic duo from England, but they're sort of make a lot of music somewhat in the vein of a Square Pusher or an Aphex Twin. But it's like super digital, harsh. You know, it's not like a lot of analog synths. But it also has, despite being so harsh and sort of in machinery sounding, has sort of a chill vibe often. So one thing I found that was kind of cool about them, they work separately in separate studios, and they have the exact same equipment, which is mostly like, you know, plugins and stuff, and like send their music back and forth to create it. They're not like sitting in the same room together.
Which is a pretty common thing, especially now during the pandemic.
Yeah, no, but this is like going back to the 90s.
Ah.
So it has a little bit more of a different connotation of like you have to like mail your stuff back and forth pretty much at that time. So I thought that was kind of cool. You're kind of bringing two brains to a piece without necessarily knowing what the other one is thinking. An interesting way of composing music.
What was the pencil joke?
It sounded like a tape cassette was spinning out of control and you had to re-spool it with a pencil.
Wow.
I'm in the
80s. Did you get that joke?
I'm in that 80s
mindset. I thought it was something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't get the joke.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for asking.
I've never listened to this. I have no idea what it is, but it sounded interesting.
Yeah. They get really, this is actually probably one of their more, at least the album as a whole, one of their more accessible albums. They get extremely weird. And
how so?
Rhythms and time signatures that do not, you know, sit well. It's not a lot of 4/4 stuff.
Let me ask as the voice of public opinion, not my own. If someone to hear this, they were like, yeah, I could go on GarageBand and get a couple loops and just put them together. I could do this. Why is this so difficult? Why is this so hard? Why is this impressive? Like, what would you say to that?
Well, why is it impressive? I mean, I don't know if music needs to be impressive.
But why are these guys making music and then like I can't just go upstairs right now in my GarageBand and put in some loops?
Well, first of all, if you listen to one of their albums, there's no way you would find a GarageBand loop even resembling what they're doing. And secondly, they are not taking.
You struck a chord here, Nick.
I know,
great. But it's
but what are they
it
doing?
It is not. Exactly. They are not taking loops. They are composing it from their own synths that they are programming and setting up the sequences themselves. They're not even like, I don't think they get that heavily into sampling. Mostly like they are composing it. If you're taking a loop in GarageBand, I don't know if I'd say you're a composer. You might be like, well, I'm a producer, but like that's not really musical composition.
Well, I think, so what I'm trying to get out of you is, and you're touching on it, is like they're programming their own music. Like,
they write the music.
I don't know if a lot of people understand what that means when you say program your own, like, sure, I can sit at a piano and play the keys. Everyone understands I just wrote a song. When you say the verb program, I think a lot of people will be like, wait, what? What do you mean program? Well, like you put in like an algorithm and it starts making music? Like I want you to kind of explain. Like,
well, that's not what they're doing. That is a thing, though, like programmatic music. But that's not what
Jim's
they're doing.
Jim's done that before.
I know.
Remember that thing in The Office and it was like, meh, boo.
I kind of want Jim to dumb it down for people to be like, sure. So when you hear this song, like, what are they actually doing?
That might be a little difficult to explain, but if you're saying, well, versus sitting down at the piano, they are writing the notes, they're more like the composer that is putting the notes down on paper. Now, obviously, it's not physical paper because that has to be fed to a synthesizer, but they are basically saying, synthesizer, play this note, and then that note, and this note, and this is the rhythm, and they set all of that, and then the synthesizer is the one that's actually producing the sound, but they are coming up with what that sound is and what the notes are.
I think that's awesome.
They're telling the synthesizer what to play.
Yeah, I think that's awesome, and I don't know if a lot of people understand that. Like, I don't think they understand that, because you said the word programming, and it just sounds, I mean, it's cool as hell. I love it. I love that idea, and I think it's really cool when Jim does it in the studio, but I wanted him to kind of, like, explain it to people who may have no idea what the hell that means when you say program a song. Like, I don't know if I would have known that before I met Jim, so I just think it's super cool, and I wanted him to explain it.
Listen, it's all zeros and ones, okay? That's all you need to know. Beyond that, it's too far for your intellectual abilities. So this is Laurie Spiegel of the album The Expanding Universe. The song is called Patchwork. And I was doing some research on female electronic artists. And I found a lot of information on early synth stuff, like from the very beginning of synthesizers, and a whole movement of women creating these avant-garde soundscapes. Did you hear that?
That sounded like a soundscape.
I'm hungry. I want my lunch. You know what I mean?
Man.
But what's... And there's a documentary, actually, that I started watching, which is called Sisters and Transistors, I think. It's Sisters and Transistors? Can you look that up, Jim?
Transistor Sisters?
Something like that.
That's what it should be
It's
called.
Super cool. And the trailer is really interesting, too.
You know the Transistor Sisters... Know who their fathers are? The synth daddies.
The synth daddies, yeah. Huh. No, but it's really interesting that she actually was commissioned to create a piece of music that went to space in 1977.
Oh, on Voyager?
On the Voyager.
Wow.
How did you know that?
Because I knew they sent music up there, I think with Chuck Berry.
Yeah, they sent this.
Yeah, wow.
They sent a piece of ambient electronic music, and she was one of them.
Maybe that caused the pandemic.
But I find that super interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of these, like, avant-garde where they end up in modern art museums. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, like, I guess it makes sense, modern art and electronic music, because it's sort of like futuristic in a way, or like, otherworldly.
That's the thing about electronic music. Even going back to Kraftwerk, it just sounds futuristic, even though it's 50 years old now or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just a thing with electronic music.
It's timeless.
Yeah.
Do you think that this music ends up in museums, as you have mentioned? You have mentioned a couple times in this episode. Do you think it's because of what it sounds? Do you think it's because of the product itself, or the actual making of the product? Like, the art of actually producing this sound, is that the part that is the art in the museum, or the finished product that is the song itself, of simply what it just sounds?
It's a
like?
Strange question, but I think it's the art itself, like the finished product.
Yeah.
Because they would be
it
playing...
It depends what museum, I guess.
But, yeah, but they would be playing the piece to an art installation.
And I think that question alone is kind of what makes electronic music cool, is that you can ask that, is the finished product stands alone, whereas the actual making of it, or like we just said, programming this machine to create this sound, that in itself is an art. And that's kind of cool just to be able to use technology and machine to create the finished product that is a sound or song. And I think it's really blowing your mind. It's really fascinating. Yeah.
The idea of programming music.
It's all about the journey.
Blowing your fucking mind.
It's like you always say, Scott, it's the journey.
I love the fact that there's a pretentious, anything that you can associate, you can attach pretentiousness to, I'm going to get behind, you know? And when you think about like, you know, women in the late 50s and in 60s creating avant-garde synth music that's being flown out to space. I mean, I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Also, think about that alien who gets that piece of music. First of all, do they have ears?
That's what I'm saying. Right. Like, we might have sent this out there back in the 70s, and by the time it got somewhere and it did something and came back, it might be now, and that's why we have a pandemic. It might be because of Chuck Berry, for all we know.
Yeah.
We might have blasted something out in outer space. It went and hit this star over that galaxy.
Like, what are we hearing? Like, if something comes to us, first of all, it's going to burn up in the fucking atmosphere, probably. Mm-hmm. But what if it doesn't, right?
Sound waves don't
burn. All of a sudden,
up.
It lands in the ocean, then there's this capsule, and we open it up, and it's like...
No, it was sound...
It's like,
note, like, what is that weird shit you sent me?
No, that's a sound wave, not a like an actual...
Yeah, but aliens... No, I know, but what if aliens don't have ears, and they can't hear it?
What if they have more than one ear, two ears?
What if we open the space capsule on Earth, and it's just, we get splashed in the face with a weird...
liquid
substance that we don't know, and that's their music.
Or they glitter bomb us.
That's their music. They're like, "Oh, you got splashed in the face by krautrock."
Wait, what? aliens' music is basically a glitter bomb.
Yeah,
that is kind of how you.
Why not? It could be a glitter bomb.
How do you explain electronic music? Well, I would explain it as if it was a glitter bomb. That's what aliens listen to.
Yeah, alien glitter bomb is a great name for an electronic music project.
Oh, Synth Daddy's Part 2, Alien Glitter Bomb.
Yeah, right?
Here, we're going to go to the next song Scott's going to shit all over, so stay tuned for that.
Thank you.
I can't wait.
There you go, part 2.
You don't know how to think outside the box. You get so bogged down by staying within the genre of what we're doing.
Because that's literally the point of the podcast.
No, it's not. We're talking about electronic.
Here's a genre.
Which is massive.
Here's a genre that we're talking about. And we're saying, take only 3 songs out of that entire genre, and you choose 2 of the songs that are not that genre.
I will blame this a bit on Scott, because he did put Pink Floyd on our pop playlist.
But yeah, Pink Floyd is one of the best pop bands of all time. But that is way more gray.
But this is the thing about...
Pop is popular music.
We don't have to stay within the lines of what we're talking about.
Okay,
here,
so why don't we do a classical playlist, and I'll put Bjork on there.
Well, if you have an interesting thing to bring up about Bjork on a classical playlist, I'd love to hear it.
But why would you choose 2 funk songs in an electronic playlist?
Because
when you only have 3 choices, and we're trying to represent the genre to listeners who are tuning in to learn about electronic music.
We literally just got done reading 10% of the subgenres of electronic music. Electronic music, as we've determined,
funk
is
not one of them.
Listen to me.
Okay.
Listen to what I'm saying.
Fine.
First off, the song is Release the Beast by Breakwater, who is traditionally known as a funk rock, but also slow R&B group. Okay? That's not electronic music. I'm admitting that. But why is this song on this list?
Because same reason as the last one.
They used synthesizers and electronic sounds to make this song to become a hit. This was the usage of a band that typically doesn't use electronic music, and their first ever hit is because they dipped their toe into this world. That is why it's on the playlist. It has nothing to do with the band, the song itself. It's just the idea that you take a band that doesn't use synthesizers or organs or any kind of distortion of anything. They make R&B slow jams.
And they use a synthesizer. All of a sudden, it's electronic music.
Yes. So they dip their toes in the world of electronic music to create this sound, and it's their biggest hit to date.
Wow.
Wow. It doesn't have to be an electronic genre.
I don't think they're dipping their toes in electronic music. I think they're just playing a synthesizer in playing funk.
And at the time, was like all these subgenres, where did they come from? You mean to tell me that people just started making all these subgenres and like
because of
things that happened like this? When you take the band and it's like, oh, well, this is a cool sound. The 80s are happening and everything's becoming, we just add a little synthesizer to it. What they did. But because of that, and it made it so popular and so such a thing, it then spawned off into what we're currently talking about, electronic music, and the thousands of subgenres that were born from it, and it was born from it because of bands like this doing it. It's an origin story. It doesn't have to be...
It's not an origin story. That's not origin. There's no origin here. This is just... Look, I love you, Nick, but you're just picking the wrong music for the playlist. It doesn't... I understand that there's synthesizers on it.
How is it wrong?
Because it's not electronic music.
Why?
It has a synthesizer on it. It doesn't inherently make it electronic. Do you understand?
No, I would disagree.
That's not true. You're just crazy.
It doesn't make sense to me if I'm trying to tell you that when there's bands who don't use the instrumentations that make up electronic music, and then they start to use it, and they become a huge popular hit.
They're not using electronic music. They're using a synthesizer. It doesn't mean...
Which is the main thing in electronic music.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly my point, is that what makes electronic music is that it is the main thing in the music, not just a part of drums, bass, groove, singing, then a synthesizer in the background. That's not electronic music. That's just using a synthesizer. Wait, I don't know, Jim. Maybe I'm wrong.
I feel like the vibe in here is very like agro electro industrial right now. So maybe we can make it a little more, ambient. But I am probably like 60% on Scott's side, but not
60. I feel like it should be 80. I feel like it should be 99%. In fact, you know what? Fuck you guys. It should be 100% on my side because I'm right.
Because I actually think this song in particular. Also, are we not going to mention that this is another Daft Punk sample?
Yeah,
which is interesting that you picked two Daft Punk samples.
I was going to bring that up, but I got derailed.
All right. Well, it's Robot Rock.
You got derailed by the truth.
Robot Rock is basically the song that riff repeated 1,000 times, and they say Robot Rock.
Yeah.
That's the most interesting thing I have about it, that it's Robot Rock. But I do think this is a very, like, maybe because I'm hearing, it's probably funny, like, Scott, did you know of that? Did you recognize it as Robot Rock?
No. I recognize it as a funk song.
When I hear this song, I think I have Robot Rock so ingrained in my head that I'm like feeling that song, which is a very electronic song. Like, it's called Robot Rock. Like, it's a very electronic song. So I think that in and of itself makes it feel more electronic to me. I mean, that's really it. It leans very heavily into that, but it is funk. So,
yeah.
I mean, I get why you put it on, but two choices like that. The first one, it's like, great, I'm making my point. Well, good. But we'll have a little debate. And then you put another one on.
But yeah, because I want to be different. I want to be able to have more talking points than, well, there's this guy that did this, and then there's this guy that did this.
Oh, but it's not different. We're having the same talking points as the first one. Also, I'm sorry. I'm just having fun having an argument with you right now.
But it's not the same talking point. Like, the same talking point, I mean, the same part is the fact that Daft Punk sampled both of them is just the coincidence that ties them together. But my point of why I put this on here is I wanted to talk about the fact that electronic music helped bands who would never think about doing something like that get hits. And sure, it doesn't typically go under the electronic genre of playlist. Sure, whatever. But it's a talking point that I want to bring up, the fact that there is that element of electronic music is in this song. That's not debatable. Well, why is it in this song? Because they decided to add a little electronic element to their sound, which created a number one hit for them. I don't know if it was number one, but their biggest hit of all time. And normally they wouldn't have done that. Well, I think that's an important thing to discuss. I think that's a very interesting thing. When it's the same thing as like, you know, I understand if we're talking about greatest guitarist of all time or electronic guitars, and you wouldn't add Bob Dylan to that list. However, when at the Newport Jazz Festival, when he picked up the electric guitar, it changed music. That's a talking point that I want to talk about. Bob Dylan is not a great guitarist, okay? Bob Dylan is not one of the greatest rock and roll guitar players of all time. He's an acoustic folk art. But the fact that he went that way, when he plugged in, it was a major turning point in music. It's a talking point. That's all
sure,
it is.
That's fine, but we're not talking about Bob Dylan.
I know. We're talking about
Breakwater. A funk band that used a synthesizer.
Yeah, it's the same.
All right, let's just move on, because we're not going to agree. We're never going to agree.
Yeah, because you won't. You'll refuse to agree.
Correct.
What is this? I hate it.
So that is Slowly by Amon Tobin, and I feel like my last two picks barely scratch what we heard does not really scratch the surface of what the songs are. But nonetheless,
you got to listen to it.
You
got to go back to the main playlist and listen to it.
Yeah. So definitely, I mean, Amon Tobin is one of the sort of mainstays of electronic music, late 90s, early to mid 2000s. And I wanted to put him on here sort of as a contrast to Autechre in that. He leans almost 100% into samples and warping samples into sort of an unrecognizable thing. You'll go back to some of his tracks and he has like known songs in there. You're like, wait, that song was sampled in there? And the way that he splices it up and warps it just makes it completely unrecognizable. A lot of his breakbeats are not funk breakbeats. He'll do like jazz and blues a lot more so. So I think it gives his songs like a particular vibe. But it's very like soundtracky music. I don't know. Are you guys familiar with him at all?
I am not.
Mm-hmm. But it is very soundtracky music. His music gets used a ton in soundtracks and just has that kind of like a lot of like floaty, maybe like drugged out feel a bit. But he's one of the sort of the, I don't want to say innovators in sampling, because sampling was around, you know, 20 some years before him. But he's one of the guys that sort of took this sampling to a new level in terms of how much he was able to warp the samples and create something new. But that wasn't so, like, inaccessible. Like, the music is still very accessible, I feel like.
This is one that I'm going to have to check out, you know, because I really know nothing about it other than it sounds nice. Nick, you seem to particularly like this song.
Nick's on tilt.
It seems to me that it's... It kind of has a hip hop vibe to it.
Oh, very much. Yeah,
it definitely has. Like, I could, from just the little seconds that we heard of it, I felt like, oh man, someone could rap over that. So it's definitely. I mean, and I only heard, that was the first time I ever heard it. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind getting into this a little bit, checking it out a little bit.
Well, listen, you know, I think we're all a little bit on edge, particularly Nick and myself.
It's like, you know what's funny?
It's hard being wrong.
You know what's funny about it? It's the same exact argument that people have about, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? And right now, I'm defending the fact that Die Hard would be a Christmas movie. But full transparency, I actually don't think that.
It's not, though. It's not the same. But anyway.
I think you're just disagreeing to disagree now.
Maybe, but I'm right.
Someone get this guy some lunch.
Go and take a poll. Play this song to 10 people outside. Maybe we should do this. And we'll see how many of those 10, we ask them after they listen to it, what kind of music this is. And we'll see what they say.
And how many say it's Daft Punk?
How many say it's... Yeah. Well, see, that's the problem, is Daft Punk. Anyway,
Daft
whatever.
Punk ruins everything.
Listen, thank you for listening. We will see you next week. That's my lunch. This is Nothing Something off the brand new record off Pinch Records. You can find it on Spotify. Links in my bio or whatever in somewhere. Love you all. Goodbye. Paper House.